If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, you know, a clown.
He never answered a single fucking medical question. The fuck, man?
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease. So I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who gives me street cred with the wacko alternative medicine assholes. This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question you're embarrassed to take to a regular medical provider, but can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call, 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine, at drscottwm, and visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, practical nurse, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. Well, I introduced Dr. Scott, but he'll be here in a minute. He's walking in the studio as we speak, so I'll do the plugs. Don't forget stuff.drsteve.com. That's stuff.drsteve.com for all of your weird medicine needs and also your online buying needs. Really helps keep us on the air. And check out backpain.drsteve.com. That's where I decided I was going to be a little more proactive with my back pain issue, and I got an inversion table. Obviously, check it out with your primary care or your treating provider before you buy something like this, but I just wanted you all to see it. It's at backpain.drsteve.com. You got to spell out doctor, D-O-C-T-O-R, steve.com. And if you want to lose weight with me, do Noom, N-O-O-M, .drsteve.com. Not a diet. It's a psychology program. Get 2 weeks free and 20% off if you decide to do it. It's only a three-month program. It's very well priced. And then you get 20% off on top of that at Noom, N-O-O-M, .drsteve.com. All right. And don't forget to check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. That's simplyherbals.net. And the perennial question, as always, Dr. Scott, do you have nasal spray on your website this week?
No.
I should just put that on a cart. And then every week, just play that. Because it's the same every effing
week.
Save
the grief.
What is wrong with you?
I'm going to shut it down.
You're going to shut it down?
Yeah, the whole Simply Herbals.
Oh, why?
Nah, I'm just tired of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm getting old.
So what is it that you're getting tired of? Because you're not actually doing anything.
No, but maintaining it. And
what are you maintaining? People have been begging for nasal spray since COVID started.
Exactly. I'm retiring. And thank you for your...
Retroactively.
Thank you for all of your support.
Oh, well.
But that's all right.
So for real, you're done with it?
Yeah, I'm going to close it off.
Well, what am I going to plug? Am I going to have to start paying you now?
Doing this for
plugs?
Greenworks. I'll come up with something stupid that you can help me with, I'm sure. Because, you know, that's my history.
Well, Simply Herbals was awesome.
Simply Herbals, it is us. No, we're just... I'm growing weary in my old age.
So, all right. I mean, I guess nobody gives a shit about this, but I do. What goes into making your proprietary nasal spray, which I have one bottle up downstairs, by the way, which I used the other night.
Mm-hmm. The ingredients?
Well, I mean, first off, you had to figure out what you wanted to put in it.
Yes.
Then you have somebody make it for you.
Yes.
And then the label.
Yep.
And then not putting it on your website and then not selling it. But I mean, what's the barrier there to, you know, that those latter two things?
No, I think a lot of it was at the beginning of COVID, losing the ability to get everything made in a timely fashion.
You
know, in a timely fashion, and then you know, honestly, you know, now shipping has become an issue with almost everything.
It's really,
yeah. You know, trying
How
to
about
ship
my ham radio stuff from DX Engineering, and geez, it comes the next day.
Well, that may be, but it's not. It's
little
not,
plug for DX yeah, Engineering.
It's not that with everything. And then, you know, if something doesn't get there in a day, then people are sending emails like, "Where's my stuff?"
Were you? Yeah, you which know. Is constant.
Mm-hmm.
The Sarasota skank keeps giving you a hard time about that.
But what I will do, though, in all seriousness, I'm going to take it off in it, but if anybody ever wants some, we'll have some.
Yeah, just email me.
They can email me. Yeah, email,
you go to
email me.
DrSteve.com and click contact.
And we will
we're not
take,
trying to sell something. No, we're not actually allowed to do that.
Nope.
But
if anybody has questions, I'll be happy to help.
We'll help you out.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, it's, you know, and it's, it, but maybe one of these days things will
kind of
normalize.
That's just sort of distressing. So were you getting your stuff from China, or was it being made in the United States?
Oh, no, it's U.S., yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, out of Murfreesboro, yeah. Yep.
Up there, Murfreesboro Highway.
Murfreesboro Highway.
You ever heard those crank calls?
Yes.
It's called Al White Motors. If you want to hear a guy just go off the deep end, just Google Al White Motors crank calls. And Murfreesboro Highway came into the picture many, many times on that.
Mm-hmm.
And they called this guy Benny. And they'll put Benny on it, but that's just the Southern accent. Mm-hmm. It's not B-I-N-N-Y. It was B-E-N-N-I-E or B-E-N-N-Y. And the guy's name was Benny, but, you know, they go, hey, Benny. Mm-hmm. And, of course, to the northern ear, that sounds like B-I-N-N-Y.
Yep.
And so you might find it under that, you know, Benny crank phone calls.
Hmm.
But this guy worked at a car dealership, and he was wound pretty tight, and he had some coworkers that just messed with him for years, would call the main number, and they could see him.
Oh, no.
You know, it was in a car dealership, so they're in one of those little offices with the glass, and they're watching the guy. And they had him thinking that he had this stalker. And apparently, when they were in Vietnam, I mean, their narrative was that he helped this guy. And when that guy died, they told this other guy, Junior, whatever the hell his name was, that he needed to watch out for Benny.
Oh, no. Yep.
So he would call him up and say, I'm just watching out for him. Well, I don't need you to watch out for him, you know. And then it just gets crazier and crazier. And then they had these little mini narratives where they'd call and ask him if they were coming to this rabbit supper. And a rabbit supper, for people who don't know, is like a place where you get together. It's like a potluck, but you'll bring game. So you can rabbits, squirrels, you know, that kind of stuff. And so for a month, are you going to that rabbit supper?
Oh my God.
Just over and over. And then he knew this person was out there because they'd say, I saw you walking around with that blue shirt on. It looks real good on you. And, I mean, now I guess, you know, 2021, I mean, it was definitely targeted harassment and stalking, but it was pretty funny.
Oh,
but anyway,
God.
So that's the Murfreesboro Highway. I saw you up there in the Murfreesboro Highway.
Lord.
Nothing. I can't make it funny. It's not even funny. There was nothing funny about it except that it went on and on and on. And it kind of went with Opie's theory of annoying comedy, which is you do something and maybe it's mildly humorous. Then it becomes not funny. And you just keep doing it until it becomes funny again.
Oh my God.
And that's what they did.
It's kind of a hard way to get to.
To
humor.
So a lot better to just craft a good joke.
Yes,
it is a form of humor, though.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, you got any articles for us this week?
I'm looking at a couple that have some potential. Yeah, we were talking earlier. It's interesting since, thankfully, this COVID thing, at least in the United States, is quietening down quite a bit.
It's crazy. You know, we've completely opened up in our area.
Mm-hmm.
No mask mandate anymore. I went to the grocery store the other day, and it was weird seeing most of the people not walking around with masks.
Yeah.
And I went to a restaurant, same deal, just packed, totally packed. yet our cases continue to decline in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Cases are going up. Hospitalizations are going down. And
People are still catching it.
Yeah. People who were really vulnerable have gotten the vaccine.
Yeah. Most of them, thankfully.
Well, I mean, it's like 75-80% in this area of people 65 years of age or older or who are vulnerable to this thing have been vaccinated. And that's why when everybody gets together, we're seeing people, lots of cases being reported, and hospitalizations continue to drop.
Yeah, which is...
We peaked out at 450 cases in the hospital, something like that.
Dang.
And then it went down to 70, 80, something like that. And then it crept back up as things were opening back up to about 130, and now back down to 60 again.
Hmm.
So...
Which is not probably too far out of the norm with a regular virus, you know, something like maybe the flu. You know?
A bad flu.
Yeah, bad flu.
But let's look. Let's go to covid.stoutlabs.com.
Stout.
This is Daniel Stout's website. You can find him on Twitter at Stoutlabs. And doesn't seem to be working. Oh, no, here. Okay, here we go. Okay, so let's look at new cases for these United States. We'll compare them to India. India just going up, but actually coming back down again. India peaked out at 412,000 daily cases, and now they're down to 281. And I'm looking over the last 100 days, United States has trended slightly downward. The last data we got was 16,000 new cases in the United States. Now let's look at new deaths. New deaths, precipitous drop in the United States. I'm looking back 100 days, peaked out at, looks like, 3,000 in a day. And yesterday was 262. Not 262,000, 262. Still, 200... people still died.
Right.
You know, don't think I'm minimizing the fact that every day 200 people are dying from this, but it ain't like it was. And let me look at the peak. I'm going to go back 300 days. And again, we're looking at covid.stoutlabs.com. And right around January 15th, which is what I kind of predicted was going to happen. It was 2 weeks after the New Year's, mm-hmm. we peaked out at 4,000 deaths per day. By the way, at the same time, India was down to 151 deaths. So we're very interested to see if this is some variant or if there's just a particular problem in India that has to do with a billion people and only tens of millions of people being vaccinated. Yeah. So.
How many people in India have gotten a vaccine?
Well, that's excellent question. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. How many vaccinated in India? Okay, here we go. Vaccinations in India. Looks like 104. Fully vaccinated is only 40 million. That's 3% of the population. At least one dose, 143 million. And so that's at least one dose of a two-dose vaccine regimen, I would guess. Otherwise, why would they say that? If it was the AstraZeneca or J&J, they would be fully vaccinated after one. Okay, so you're looking at 13% of the population has received at least one dose.
At least one dose.
So let's see if I can get the same graph for the United States. And sorry for doing research on the air, everybody. Okay, so you're looking at least one dose, 48% fully vaccinated, 37.9. So, it's pretty good, actually. And then when you break it down by age group, the over 65 group is well vaccinated. So there you go. Pennsylvania. 40% of people are fully vaccinated. That's the whole population. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. All right. What else you got?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Well, no, it's just, it was
fucking fascinating, Dr. Scott.
No, I just thought it's so in and kind of compelling to think what all we used to talk about prior to the COVID thing. It was always poop and penises and all the cool stuff.
Urethral meatus. Hemorrhoids.
And you just saying that you're going back 300 days to look up research, it's just so bizarre. But you know, I was thinking about how incredible that humanity is to be able to take these changes and to make adjustments to daily life and daily schedules, and which does bring up something that I hope we will eventually get to talk about a little bit, is just changing in work status, people's work habits and some of the stressors that's causing at home.
Well, I don't ever want to go back to in-person meetings.
No,
it's like now that cat is out of the bag. I mean, I have a ethics committee meeting, and they were like, "Well, next month we're going to do it in person." It's like, why?
Yeah, yeah.
I can run home if it's at 4 p.m. I can run home, do it from my studio up here, and then go have a drink or something if I want to.
Yep. Or throw some laundry in.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Before the meeting, instead of being stuck in a meeting that you've got to drive to.
Yep. Yeah, and it's in a different town.
It's in a different town, and you got to make accommodations for your kids and your dogs and everything. And
virtual meetings for those kind of meetings make sense.
Heck yeah.
When you're not, I'm not in favor of virtual schooling. My kid has to take one class virtually this next year even. Mm-hmm. He's going to college this year, which, by the way, holy shit. I took him to orientation today, and he had some trepidation. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the kid, I changed his diapers till he was potty trained. Mm-hmm. I did about, I would say probably half the diapers. Mm-hmm. And, helped him with his homework, the whole drill.
Yeah.
And you
You're
do all this dad. Stuff. And then I took him to orientation. Mm-hmm. He graduated with honors. Thank you. Very excellent. Good job, young man, from high school. And got some Tennessee Diploma of Distinction or something. He had to do some other stuff. But anyway, so I take him, and he had some trepidation about it because he was thinking that college was going to be just like high school, except harder. So that he would be going from 7 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon, just booking it every single day. And so when we met with his advisor, by the way, virtually, which was awesome. There was no reason for us to drive down there and have to see her. We were just sitting at home. I think I was having a beer and got his schedule done. And he was like, wait a minute, you mean on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm done at 10 o'clock? And it's like, yes, my friend, this is when time management starts to be, an important thing in your life, because you got to figure out how not to just waste all that free time. But he was like, oh, that's cool. Well, so I take him to, he still had some trepidation. He hadn't spent a lot of time away from home. And I took him to orientation, and he saw all the other kids his age, and the place where he's going is beautiful. And this center that they had this, gorgeous brand new auditorium and all this stuff. And we got him checked in. I said, you going to be okay? He said, yeah, I think I'm going to be okay. And I said, do I need to stay? And he's like, no, I think I got it. And let me tell you something. Looking at that kid merge in from behind, I'm watching him now. He's turned around. He's walking away from me, merge into that crowd. And all I can see is the back of his head. And it marks this period where he's now no longer totally dependent on me. And he's entering a new phase of his life where he's going to be. That kind of effed me up a little bit.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, just seeing that big waft of crazy curly blonde hair kind of mixing into the crowd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and I got choked up, and it's like, I'm not sad.
Yeah.
But there's not a word in English for what it is that you are when that happens. Because I'm happy for him. I'm proud of him.
Yeah.
There is some wistfulness.
Yeah.
Because he's not dependent, but I liken it more to. I mean, did you cry at the end of Rudy?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Why? It wasn't sad.
Who does it? You cry at the end of at the end of Field of Dreams.
But why?
Yeah.
It wasn't sad.
It wasn't sad at all. No, it was beautiful.
No, it's somebody's dreams were realized. Yeah. So why do we cry?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And it's more like that kind of, that. But that, there's not a word for that either.
No.
Now
no.
There's a word for when you take pleasure from somebody falling down and breaking their kneecap.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that word is?
Oh, gosh. No, I don't.
Schadenfreude.
Oh, Schadenfreude. No, I did not know that.
And but, yeah, so there's a word for that emotion. But there's not a word for the emotion when your kid kind of goes from the caterpillar to the effing butterfly and spreads their wings a little bit.
Yeah.
And you realize that, you know, I don't know.
You know, and that's...
There's got to be a word for
there's
that.
There's got to be a word. You know, the really kind of cool thing is because...
Some damn English scholar, but Mark, call in, and I'll send you a pen if you give me the right word.
But, you know, marking that space and time is not like marking other things. And you've talked about it 1,000 times. The reason everything's on 10 is because we had 10 fingers, right?
Right.
You know,
that's right.
Dates.
It's base 10.
Dates. We have times. We know these things happen at these certain times. But that's, and I wonder if some of that uncertainty and that happening in such a... vulnerable time and space.
Yeah,
it makes it even more.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about now, but I do.
Well, because it's not just a fine time. I mean, it's kind of this arbitrary thing. And all of a sudden, it hits you. You're like, oh fuck.
Well, my first nurse practitioner, the first one I ever worked with, she was probably the nurse practitioner I was the closest to.
Mm-hmm.
And she was more like my sister. And when her kid was born, it's the only time I ever weaved a basket was I did it for her to carry him around. I weaved one basket in my life.
And put that on the list of things Dr. Steve can do.
I know. Well, I can't do it. I had a teacher, but I remember her telling me the first day that she took him to kindergarten, and she had that same experience because she took him to kindergarten. And they had breakfast at this school. So, you know, he went through the line, got his little thing of, you know, plate of pancakes. And he was eating them. And she said, "Are you going to be okay?" He's like, "Yeah, Mom, I'm fine." And so she left because they were supposed to leave. She's supposed to just drop him off.
Right.
And, you know, she just looked back at him sitting there at this table by himself eating pancakes. And she just got all that boo-hoo thing. And... The thing is, what you don't want, so it's not sadness because what you don't want is a kindergartner that can't do that, that's going, "No, don't leave, stay," you know, or you don't want an 18-year-old that's still sleeping in your bed.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You want them to, but then when they do, then you're like, I don't get it.
Why aren't you still 3 years old?
I know, I don't understand it. But you wouldn't want them to just still be 10 years old. That's the thing.
No, you don't.
It's like, I don't know, dude. It's anyway.
Kind of bizarre.
Nobody gives a damn shit about it.
Stop bullshitting.
All right. Yeah, okay, I got it.
But he is a wonderful child, I will tell you that.
Well, that's neither here nor there. No one that's listening knows whether to believe you or not. So anyway, well, if you're going to have a kid, go to drsteve.com and check out my one-page baby manual. That'll get you on the road to having a well-adjusted kid. Because a well-adjusted baby becomes a well-adjusted kid. All right. Enough. All right. What else we got? That it?
That's it.
You don't have any articles?
No, nothing good.
All right. 22 minutes of just horse shit. Me and my sentimental. I watched that movie, The Arrival, again.
Oh, no.
Cried for 20 minutes at the end of it.
It'll be interesting to see.
I mean, literally just boo-hooing.
You know, it would be interesting to see what all... other people that are listening to the show, what some of their all time favorite crying movies are?
My
number one,
what
Field of Dreams?
Okay, yeah, I choked up during Field of Dreams, but crying for 20 minutes in the parking lot with people walking by, going, "What the fuck is wrong with that guy?" Two movies, AI, artificial intelligence, for which I will despise Steven Spielberg for the rest of my life because there was no reason for that movie to end the way it did. Spoiler, they bring his mother back for 24 hours, and these are these intelligent, you know, robots who, you know, found their progenitor buried in the ice. This And all he wanted to do was, you know, have his mom. That was the have his mom love him. And he they had some DNA on a hairbrush. And from the DNA, they recreated the mom. Somehow from the DNA, they created all her memories and all this stuff, too. I think they just programmed it. Mm-hmm. But it would only last for 24 hours. And then they could never do it again. Now, if they did it once, how could they not do it again? Mm. So this poor effing kid got to spend a day coloring and stuff with his mom for 24 hours. And then that's it.
That's the worst.
For the rest of it. Wow. And I cried like, oh God, it was awful. And it was like, you asshole, there was no reason for that.
No.
They were robots. They could have just made an android.
Yeah, make another one for God's sakes.
Or just do it again tomorrow and then the next day and the next day.
Zip drive her brain and, you know.
But you can't copy the DNA. I mean, you're this advanced that you could create a whole human being.
Steven Spielberg can.
From a well, he couldn't come up with a hook that wouldn't make me cry. That was just designed to make me cry, and that pisses me off because it was just emotional manipulation.
Yeah, it's true. It's abuse.
Now, but the other one was Schindler's List.
Oh,
again, though,
Lord.
Another damn Spielberg movie. And for this, I will always love Steven Spielberg. So there you go. But at the end, when he's like, "Oh, look at this ring! I could have saved 20." You know, it's like, "Oh my God,
yeah.
20 minutes." Out in the lobby.
That's a hell of a movie. Yeah, if nobody's ever seen that, that is a powerful.
Both of them, Steven Spielberg. One I love him for, and one I hate his guts for. So, asshole.
Damn.
Yeah. Beautiful asshole. Yes. But anyway, all right.
That's wonderful.
Why were we talking about that again? Oh, just crying.
Crime
okay,
movie. Yeah.
So, AI, Schindler's List, The Arrival. Mm-hmm. Those were my big ones for actually crying.
Mm-hmm.
And The Arrival, you know, it's some aliens, but it's not really about that. It's about choices that we make. Hmm. And if you knew certain things, would you make those same choices?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Hmm.
I don't want to spoil. That's all I'm saying. That's really what that movie is about.
But it's well done.
And that Denis Villeneuve dude that made that movie, he also made the Blade Runner sequel, which was also a really beautiful film.
Hmm.
And he's making the Dune movie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you know, they're redoing Dune. It's the first book is going to be divided into two parts. They haven't even greenlit the second one yet, so he just did it on faith alone. Mm. But this guy makes beautiful films, and I can't wait to see.
That'd be good.
All right. Enough. My stupid shit. Here we go.
Number one thing: don't take advice from some asshole
on
the radio.
This is John from Chicago.
Hey, John.
Hi, Casey.
Hey.
Hi, Dr. Scott.
Hey.
Hope you all are good. How are you?
Okay.
Great.
We should probably rehearse these first. So let's see. But that's the whole point of this is most of these I've not heard. So let's try that again.
Ill prepared.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey, man.
This is John from Chicago.
Hey, John.
Hi, Casey.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Scott.
What's up?
Hope you all are good.
Yeah,
how
good,
are you?
Yeah, hey, we're good. How are you?
Fabulous.
Great. Hey, Dr. Steve,
so
question
stupid.
For you on nasal hairs.
Yes.
Do they serve a purpose, maybe preventing certain, you know, virus particles or anything from getting up into the, you know, blood-brain barrier that the nasal passage is near? Or are they just some sort of leftover thing from caveman days? Wonder if when I'm trimming them and trying to get rid of all that gross stuff in the nose, is that maybe from a long-term perspective harmful, you know? Or is it, it's cosmetic and you're good?
Yeah.
Thanks a bunch. Bye.
Well, so as I discovered when I was single, nose hairs that you can see from the outside, not a good look.
No. They're not decorative at all.
I had this, this friend, and I remember I was in her apartment, and she was so hot. And I had no idea that I had nose hairs sticking out. You know, you look in the mirror every day, you don't notice things.
Sure.
And she came at me with a pair of scissors and said, "Oh my God, I'm going to cut those damn nose hairs." And that's when I realized, oh, I'm gross. I have nose hairs hanging out of my nose. And she was, this beautiful woman was going to cut them out of my nose. I said, well, I'm never going to get laid with her.
No.
Because now if I went, you know, got anywhere closer to her, she's just going to think, oh, this is nose hair guy. I clipped his nose hairs with a pair of, you know, office scissors.
Maybe manscaping is her thing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think it was a. I didn't get the impression it was a turn on, but Manscaped makes a really nice nose trimmer, and
then
you can buy nose trimmers, and it's okay to trim it so that it's not hanging out of your nose. There's no benefit to that. Now there is benefit to nose hairs, but mm-hmm. you'll never pull them all out.
No.
By the way, a single nose hair follicle will grow 6.5 feet of hair in your lifetime.
Wow.
Now, you know, you grow the hairs to a certain length and then they fall out, then you generate new ones. But when you get older, your hairs get longer and are definitely more noticeable. And then all of a sudden, it's like, what the hell is this? I'm growing hair out of my ear?
Okay.
Yeah. So, so I don't want to be growing hair out of my ear or any other stupid place, but you do, and that's why getting old sucks. Not the only reason, but one of the many reasons. But your nose hairs keep macro particles out of your nose, not really viruses. Now, if they're wet, they may trap some inhaled really small particles, so that if your nose is running and you inhale a load of virus, it's possible that they will adhere to the wet hairs, and, you know, because of the turbulence caused by those hairs during inhalation, they're more likely to get stuck. But that's not really what it's for. That's just conjecture on my part. It's really for things like dust and allergens and other small particles, and it keeps them from entering your lungs. And so the hypothesis is, if you remove too much, you could be more sensitive to those kinds of things. But, you know, in our world these days, you don't encounter as much crap in the air as we once did when we were evolving as a species. So,
hey, I've got something interesting.
Yep, go.
It looks like the longest nose hair that I can find online is a guy had the one that was 18 millimeters long.
Oh, my. Wait, 18 millimeters? Yeah. That's not very long.
Yeah, still.
Do you mean 18 centimeters?
It said millimeters. But it looks longer.
That cannot be the record for nose hair.
That's what it said. I don't Hang believe on, it. It did look a hell of a lot longer than that. So I'm wondering if they meant centimeters.
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
It has to be. And that's pretty impressive.
Okay. Vernon Frenzel Sr. pulled out his nose hair 18 millimeters long using tweezers. 18 millimeters.
It doesn't sound very long.
No.
That looks longer than that, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, point is,
this is medical journalism.
Yeah, if it's that long, go ahead and trim it up. Yeah. Manscaping is a good thing.
Yeah, let me see. I'm not impressed by 18 millimeters.
Yeah,
because 2.5 centimeters, which is 25 millimeters. Mm-hmm. Is 1 inch, right. So that's less than an inch.
That's less than an inch stick, but that's still nothing. But still sticking out of your nose.
Surely to God, someone's had one that was, you know, 2 feet long.
Yeah, I'm looking on Guinness.
Okay, so if you pluck your nose hairs, that can be a problem because you're pulling the hair out by the follicle, and then you can get things like ingrown hairs. As the hair tries to grow back in a traumatized follicle that's inflamed, sometimes it can get caught and just curl up in the follicle instead of growing out, so you can get an ingrown hair. There's a thing called nasal vestibulitis, which is an infection of the nasal vestibule, which is the inside part of your nose that, you know, protrudes from your face. The vestibule, it makes sense if you think of a vestibule. It's got the biggest open space in it. And this is sort of a form of impetigo. It's a staph infection of the membranes inside the nose. And it can be caused by any kind of injury, but also just plucking your nose hair or picking your nose. And then if you get an abscess, then it's called nasal furunculosis.
Ooh.
And these are abscesses, and this is more common in people who have some sort of immune deficiency, but it will cause pain and swelling and redness and that kind of stuff. So, all right.
Cool.
I'm looking at Healthline right now. It says nose hairs block dust and allergens from passing through your nasal cavities. Removing too many hairs allows more particles to pass through your nose into your lungs. For some people, this may increase the risk for developing asthma. So now that sounds like a conjecture in my head. So I'm going to look at this study. By the way, do you know the medical term for nose hair?
No.
Really?
No, I don't. Not right offhand.
Vibrissae.
Vibrissae.
Yeah. So this is an original paper from the International Archives of Allergy and Immunology. It says, does nose hair, parentheses, vibrissae, density, affect the risk of developing asthma in patients with seasonal rhinitis? Wow. So what they're asking is, if you're more dense, the hypothesis would be that you would have less allergies because you're admitting fewer allergens into your lung. And I'm just going to read the conclusion. Our findings suggest that the amount of nasal hair providing a nose filtration function has a protective effect on the risk of developing asthma in these patients. To the best of our knowledge, this is the first report on this subject in the literature. So let's see. Let's look at the results. Asthma was detected in 75 patients. That was about a third. And of those, two-thirds also had pollen asthma. The rate of asthma was 44, 26, and 16 in the few, moderate, and many groups. Okay, so in other words, the more dense the nose hairs, the rate of asthma decreased by a little bit more than a half.
Wow.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Makes sense, though. You got to figure it's just, it's an air filter inside your nose.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's trying to keep all the crud out.
It works better, and I think it does.
Yeah.
All right. Very interesting. All right.
Hello, Dr. Steve. This is Mark, and I've got a question, several, but I'll try to keep it brief.
Okay.
About testosterone plant-based pellet therapy. I'm 48 years old, and my testosterone is down to 300. I recently started the therapy and got up to 1,100. Noticed a change, big change, but not like earth-shattering. But I'm able to work out harder, have more stamina, and less anxiety, and I can sleep better.
Okay.
So, actually, it's really helped.
Good.
Trying to get my wife to start the therapy with estrogen and testosterone as well because she is probably postmenopausal. She started early at 42.
Yeah.
So I was trying to, you know, see if she would also participate because I can see all the signs of being menopausal in her, and we're not even 50 yet. And I'm like, man, and, you know, it's kind of a drag.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on it. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, man. So let's talk a little bit about testosterone replacement for men. You're doing the pellet, so you get this is an implantable pellet, looks like a little seed, and depending on what dose they want to administer to you, they'll do more, you know, more or fewer seeds. And they implant them under the skin, and your body sort of leaches the testosterone out of those over time, and you end up with a constant amount of testosterone being released into the system. There are other ways to do it, and there are some men's health people who advocate doing a shot instead so that you get that peak. And other people say, well, the peak is a problem. So when you do a shot, you'll have, if you do it every 2 weeks, you'll get a peak. You'll feel good for a week. And then maybe for half of the second week, you'll start to feel, hey, it's time for my shot again. And it's up and down, up and down. And some people say, well, that's not good. But we had a men's health expert on this show many years ago that said, no, that's exactly what you want. And I'm like, well, okay, do the testicles do it that way? No.
No.
I don't know, but he thought that it really, maybe he was improving on nature. I mean, seriously, what the hell do I know? When it comes to women, there have been a lot of different ways to treat women with menopausal symptoms over the years. And initially, whenever somebody went into menopause, we just gave them estrogen replacement.
Right.
And then we found that we were increasing the risk of blood clots in the legs and the lungs. And we had an increased risk of breast cancer was seen with 5 or more years of continuous estrogen therapy, and maybe even earlier than that. And the risk decreased after the hormone therapy was stopped. So, you know, if we had someone that was menopausal and they'd had a hysterectomy, we just put them on estrogen.
Right.
For years, we did that. When I say we, I mean other people. And the use of estrogen alone for an average of 7 years by itself didn't really increase the risk. But what you were doing was going from like 1 in 11 women getting breast cancer to 1 in 11.001. But so the risk to the individual was relatively low, but the risk to society and women in general was pretty significant. So, and there's not a lot of controversy about this. I mean, hormone therapy definitely reduces menopausal symptoms. And, you know, women who have had their uterus removed can generally take estrogen by itself without the progesterone. You know, you have to talk to your OBGYN about this. And you want to minimize it. You want to do it for the shortest time possible. And in people who are at high risk, smokers, if you're menopausal and you're a smoker, I'm not putting you on estrogen because you're more likely to have complications.
Mm-hmm.
So yet another reason to quit smoking. But so you just got to talk to your OBGYN about that. Now, as far as testosterone in women, there are some studies that suggest that testosterone can help ease menopausal symptoms without increasing breast cancer risk. Now, and they may improve libido as well. One of the treatments for hot flashes in menopausal women are SSRI antidepressants. They work reasonably well. But the problem is it can kill your libido if you had one left after going through menopause.
Right.
So this study, let me see if I can find this. This is called the Testosterone Implant Breast Cancer Prevention Study. The researchers wanted to see if using testosterone instead of estrogen and progesterone to treat menopausal symptoms would increase the risk of breast cancer. So their endpoint was risk of incidence of breast cancer. That was the endpoint of this. We've talked about the importance of what are you studying for. You can't just do a shotgun study. So 1,268 postmenopausal women with no history of breast cancer who had menopausal symptoms were treated with testosterone pellet implanted under the skin every 3 months. None of the women were taking estrogen, and they were average of 52 years old when the first pellet was implanted. Some of the doctors believed that estrogen could be converted from the that they could create estrogen from the testosterone. So some of the treatment cohort were treated with pellets that blocked estrogen at the level of the receptor. So they followed the women for 10 years, and we have the results from the first 5 years of follow-up. They're going to follow them for 10 years. And as of March 2013, 8 cases of breast cancer had been diagnosed in the 1,268 women for a rate of 0.63%, and that would be 142 cases per 100,000 person years. 6 of the 8 cancers were stage 1, and 5 of the cancers were this other thing called HER2 negative. And so now they looked at cancer rates among people using hormone replacement therapy, and there were 380 cases per 100,000. Compared to 300, in people with estrogen, compared to 300 per 100,000 people not using estrogen, but also not using testosterone, right? So there were 142 in the testosterone group. So the study seemed to show that using the testosterone implant with or without the estrogen blocker actually lowered the risk of breast cancer. So the study didn't have a control group of similar women, so this isn't a perfect study. These results were promising. I am not aware of more up-to-date results. There may be some. But again, I'm throwing this out there not to make any recommendation that anybody do anything. Don't do a damn thing because I said it. Just talk to your OBGYN about it because they will be up to date on the most recent stuff. And, you know, my interest is in looking at studies. How do we know things to be true?
Right.
And studies like this is how we get to that number. All right. Okie dokie.
Dr. Steve, okay. Follow up from a few weeks ago. Y'all were talking.
Okay, this is Stacy DeLoach, everybody. Hello, Stacy. I still don't have a theme song for him.
About pain management, how pain is transmitted.
Yep.
On the other end of the spectrum, pain management. How does a pill that I take find its way for pain relief? Because if I take the pill, it's broken down my stomach, goes into the bloodstream. To me, it's like a 1940s. Kids yelling newspaper, ibuprofen, ibuprofen, who needs ibuprofen? And then you see these people that claim they have targeted pain relief. How the hell would you target something that goes through your bloodstream and train it to know where to go?
Okay, that's a good question. A really good question. Just remember there are different receptors in the body.
Many different receptors.
And they can be in different places and they can act on different things. Mm-hmm. Differently. So, for example, this isn't a great example. It doesn't meet the criteria that he laid out, but there's a drug called methylnaltrexone. Methylnaltrexone is a drug that targets only peripheral mu opioid receptors. Now, what are the mu opioid receptors? Those are the receptors that are triggered, or we say agonized, but are triggered by opiates. So morphine and that kind of stuff. So what the hell good is this? Why would you want a peripheral one? Well, one of the adverse effects of opioids, or aka narcotics, oxycodone, hydrocodone, that kind of stuff, is constipation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a opioid receptor mediated effect where the opioid isn't affecting the pain at that point. It's just the receptors being triggered slow the peristalsis, the contraction of the bowel, and you get constipation.
Yes.
So if you have a peripheral mu opioid receptor blocker like methylnaltrexone, what happens is that morphine can no longer paralyze the bowel, but the methylnaltrexone does not block the pain relief part, because that's central. That's in the central nervous system.
Right.
So that is a targeted approach. You're targeting the peripheral mu opioid receptors and ignoring or bypassing those central ones that cause the pain relief. So you can take your hydros or oxys or Dilaudid and get constipation. Then you take this medication, it will relieve the constipation but won't affect the pain control that you get from that opioid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all receptor based. That's what they mean, because he's absolutely right. And I'll give him one of these.
Give yourself a bill.
Because this is the thing I talk to people about all the time. If they've got pain on the top of their shoe, of their foot, and I'm sure you counsel your patients the same way, why would I give them a pill that goes to the tip of their nose and the back of their eyeball?
Yes, everywhere.
It has to go everywhere just to get to the tip of the toe, when if I could treat it topically by putting some medication actually on the top of the foot, I could make it go away that way.
Yep.
And that's truly targeted therapy, but it only works when you can get to the place where the pain is.
Yes.
Otherwise, we have to do it this way.
Do it orally, right, or injection-wise, yep.
Yep, and it has to go to every cell in your body. But many of them don't have the receptors,
right?
So it just kind of...
Or the receptors are swamped, or they don't accept information like they used to, because they've been...
Or that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But if you go to a red blood cell, ibuprofen, there's nothing that the red blood cell has that the ibuprofen's going to interact with.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll just kind of float on by that, but it may have some effect on, you know, it has those kind of drugs work on a, it doesn't matter. A system of prostaglandins, just don't even worry about
really
it.
Really complicated.
It is a very complicated cascade. But, you know, and they can also affect platelet function.
Sure. Yeah, thins your blood depending on what kind of.
Well, it causes your platelets to be less able to form a clot.
Clots, yep. Yeah, it's
and that sucks because if you have that problem, and now they also, because of they work on prostaglandins, which are involved in making the protective lining of the stomach, when you wear that away, and then it bleeds, and now you've messed with the platelets so that they can't clot. Now you have, you've
big
set bubble. Somebody up for a GI bleed,
big
which
trouble.
Is why elderly folks, really, for a lot of folks with bad osteoarthritis pain, a low-dose opioid is safer for them. It seems crazy.
Yep.
It's safer for them than a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory
drug. An Advil or Tylenol
or
Aleve or whatever.
Yeah, now Tylenol is not a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It's an analgesia, but it doesn't work for a lot of people.
Right.
So that's why you'd want to go to Dr. Scott.
Yeah.
If you get relief from acupuncture or any of those other things, that's fine because you're less likely to get a GI bleed from what Dr. Scott does.
Yep.
Or a very low dose opioid than you are from ibuprofen or naprosyn or something like that.
Yes.
So what were you going to say?
Absolutely true. No, I just agree with you. You know, that's a great question from Stacy, but man, it is that's something we could do a couple of shows on. Just
well, yeah, pain is so subjective.
Yeah, and the difference between peripheral nerves and central nerves and the way all of those receptors work, it's a pretty complicated system. So.
Yep, and I got to go stretch my back. The thing that's really helped me with my neurogenic claudication, because, you know, we're talking about me again because it's all about me, is for those that don't know, I've got a really bad set of building blocks in my spine that are all out of alignment, not like a chiropractic out of alignment. I mean, they're just not where they're supposed to be, and they're putting pressure on the nerve that goes to my left leg. And the greatest thing I have found so far, and I still haven't seen Dr. Scott for this, although I need to, is this inversion table.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
It's the greatest thing ever invented.
Yep.
It takes up a lot of space in your room, but if you want to check one out, you can go to backpain.drsteve.com and just look at it. I mean, I'm not trying to sell you anything at this point. It's not they're not a sponsor or anything like that, but I was so excited about it I had to make a subdomain so that people could see what the hell I'm talking about. But you know, you spend all day with your spine being compressed in one direction. It's just so nice to take not only take the pressure off, but to stretch your spine in the other direction. It really does take the pressure off of my spine. But anyway,
yeah, that's good stuff.
All right, buddy, you should get one of those for your office. Just throw people on there, stick a bunch of needles in their nose.
There you go.
And flip them upside down. Their back pain will go away, and you can take credit for it. Let's do one more and get out of here. Let's see here. I think this looks like it might be a good one.
This is Craig from Jersey. So the CDC addresses masks and handshaking, but what about passing joints and blunts and bowls? Where does that fall? Thank you.
Do people still do that? I mean, with vaping and edibles and stuff, do people still pass J's, man? At the people's concert in Ann Arbor, man, they still pass a J. You know, man, can I buy a lid? Well, how old am I? That was my 60s lingo, man. No, it's contagious as shit. It was contagious then. People were getting herpes of the lip, passing joints around. So it's the same as if you're kissing somebody because it's got their slobber on it. So if you wouldn't want to kiss somebody, don't drink after them, and don't accept a joint from them. And it's like, you know, it's 2021. Seriously, are we still passing joints around? I don't know. You got me on that one. So, but that's the rule of thumb. If you don't mind just deep tongue kissing someone, then you're fine to share a joint with them. Otherwise, don't do it. It's stupid. All right. Thanks always go to Dr. Scott. Thank you, sir. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, That Gould Girl, Lewis Johnson, Paul Obcharski, Chowdy 1008, and, Eric Nagel, The Port Charlotte Whore, The Saratoga Skank, Steve Tucci, Roland Campos, Sister of Chris, Sam Roberts, She Who Owns Pigs and Snakes, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Matt Kleinschmidt, Dale Dudley, Holly from the Gulf, the great Rob Bartlett, Casey's Wet T-Shirt, Carl's Deviated Septum, Bernie and Sid, Martha from Arkansas's Daughter, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, the always fantastic and delightful Fez Watley, whose support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps. Quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.